Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's 5 minutes past nine in Pretoria, same time like here in Bonn, Germany, where we bring you Africa Link. Good morning and welcome to the program with me, Crispin Mwakideu. Our main stories this Wednesday, the 24th of June. South Africa's opposition criticised President Jacob Zuma and his ruling ANC for allowing Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir to leave the country despite a court order preventing him from doing so.
You lied to us. You said you'd uphold the constitution, uphold the law, and be the example. You have misled the people of our country. And now we are ashamed before the nations of the world.
In a similar related story, the head of Rwandan intelligence is detained by Britain on a Spanish arrest warrant. Kigali is furious and rights groups are concerned.
Human Rights Watch has commented on the sloppiness of the investigations underpinning these arrest warrants. And there are some serious question marks as to whether the charges in fact would stick if this in fact proceeds to trial.
These stories and more right after this.
Top story.
Caught in another storm. South Africa's President Jacob Zuma and his ruling ANC have come under fire from opposition parties. The opposition condemned the government for allowing Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir to attend the recent African Union summit and then slip back home despite a court order preventing him from leaving the country. During a parliamentary debate on Tuesday, Congress of the People leader Mosiyouwa Lekota lashed out at the government for disregarding the law.
You lied to us. You said you'd uphold the constitution, uphold the law, and be the example. You have misled the people of our country. And now we are ashamed before the nations of the world.
And for more on that debate, I'll be speaking to our correspondent Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg.
Really, if this was a contest, one would be right to say the opposition won, because they came out in full force saying to the government this was not supposed to happen, saying South Africa was legally bound to arrest President al-Bashir, and they said the government openly disobeyed a clear court order that barred al-Bashir from leaving the country. And you'd remember that immediately when the court ruled that he should be arrested, it is when it was revealed that he had escaped. And the opposition said the government lied to the court, pretending that al-Bashir was still in the country, knowing very well that the man had left. So the opposition came out, almost all parties, saying the government has shown that it cannot be trusted to uphold the law, it cannot be trusted to protect the people of South Africa. But you know, ANC also came out saying, no, al-Bashir was a guest of the AU and it was not our duty to arrest him. He came and he was protected. He had immunity like all the heads of state that came.
And could this scandal cause serious difficulties for the ANC? Or will their comfortable majority enable them to just ride out of this political storm?
Obviously, the image of ANC has been dented by this. You'd remember President Zuma has always been described by the opposition as a corrupt president. He had 700 corruption charges dropped, of course, and there was an issue with public funds that were used at his Inkandla home. The public protector ruled that he should pay part of the money, but up to now has not paid. So that picture is getting deeper and deeper, and it's even getting worse now. And people are viewing the ANC as a government that is corrupt, that is doing things that are against the law. And definitely this is going to get ugly for the ANC, especially when it comes to elections. But of course, the ANC is a liberation party. It has the majority, and not all people believe that the party is corrupt. So it can still use this majority to win elections and to continue being in power.
And what will be the next step in this affair? Is the government going to face legal action, maybe from the opposition or human rights activists?
There is that likelihood. Today, the court is expected to give his reasons why it ordered that al-Bashir should be arrested, and the court is still waiting for the government. It ordered the government long back to give it an affidavit explaining why and how al-Bashir was able to leave, and the government hasn't done that. So that is expected also to be done. The Democratic Alliance has also announced that it is going to approach the public protector to investigate who exactly allowed al-Bashir to leave the country. So this matter is not over yet. We're still going to see court battles and court rulings, and the implications that are coming from there will also be escalating this matter forward. So we expect that there will be matters discussed in the court, and there will be implications, and people will continue to discuss this matter. And all of that is denting the image of the government and the image of the ANC as a party.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg. The Secretary General of the ANC, Gwede Mantashe, has gone so far as to describe the International Criminal Court as dangerous. So how widely held is that view of the ICC within the ruling African National Congress? Lizo Love, an African Union analyst and consultant at the Institute for Security Studies, responds to that question in an interview with Mark Caldwell.
It is widely held, I must say. Even during the AU summit, when there was still speculation about whether al-Bashir would be arrested or not, some commentators close to the ANC already pointed out, you know, the fact that everyone behind bars in The Hague tried by the ICC are Africans at this point, and the mantra that the AU also has been upholding in saying that the ICC is targeting Africa. So it is quite widely held in the ANC and amongst a section of the South African public opinion, definitely.
But is the South African government seriously contemplating pulling out of the ICC?
It sounds like it. I mean, Gwede Mantashe is a very powerful politician. He's Secretary General of the ANC, as you said. It will be very complicated, though, according to legal experts, for South Africa to withdraw, because the Rome Statute has been domesticated in South African law. And even if South Africa withdraws, it will still have to comply with the ICC and the Rome Statute, or everything that was decided up to the point that South Africa withdraws. Like, for example, if we would withdraw today from the ICC and Omar al-Bashir were to visit again, South Africa will still be obliged to arrest him. So it will be a lengthy process. We'll have to go through Parliament. And some also say it might even be unconstitutional.
So what would South Africa gain by pulling out of the ICC, and what would it lose?
It would gain, as I said, a section of the public opinion would agree with that. The African Union has been promoting that point of view ever since the indictment of Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir. It will definitely lose credibility amongst its international partners.
How do you see Bashir's departure from South Africa affecting bilateral relations with Sudan?
I mean, I don't think anybody really envisaged South Africa arresting Omar al-Bashir. It would have been so unprecedented, but still the way it was managed and the secrecy around it, the lies really of some politicians and people in government who said they didn't know. It is really a failure of South Africa's preventative diplomacy of not made enough effort to convince him not to come to South Africa. It shows actually that the bilateral relations between South Africa and Sudan are not that good. Otherwise, you know, they could have convinced him to say, look, you are putting us in an impossible situation, rather not come.
But there has been an unprecedented row between the government and the judiciary. How do you see that playing out?
Yes, it's interesting, and many people are saying that this shows the independence of the South African judiciary. It definitely does, and the robust role that civil society plays, the organization that brought the case to court, the Southern African Litigation Center, have been praised for, you know, taking up this issue.
Expert on the African Union and consultant at the Institute for Security Studies, Lizo Love. And we shall return to South Africa in Behind the Headlines to find out what the ANC intends to do with indisciplined lawmakers.
News, analysis and feature reports. All that's here on Africa Link.
Prosecutors in Spain called on Britain on Tuesday to extradite General Karenzi Karake, the head of Rwanda's intelligence service, to Madrid after he was arrested in London. The 54-year-old top security official in President Kagame's government has a Spanish arrest warrant that was issued as part of an investigation into alleged crimes during the Rwandan genocide. Phil Clark, lecturer in international politics at SOAS at the University of London, has been telling Mark Caldwell more about that arrest warrant.
This is an example of police cooperation between the UK and Spain. The Spanish arrest warrants for General Carenzi and 39 other Rwandan officials has been out for 7 years now. And many people had believed that, in fact, we would never see any arrests of any of these individuals. The UK has taken it upon itself to arrest General Carenzi. The UK will now look at the evidence against him and decide whether there's a case to extradite him to Spain for prosecution there.
What events do these charges relate to?
These particular charges relate to an allegation that the current ruling party in Rwanda, the Rwandan Patriotic Front, that their army committed large-scale massacres against Hutu civilians in the aftermath of the genocide in 1994, and that amongst the number of people killed were several Spanish nationals, which is why Spain is taking such an interest in this. This will be one of the first times that members of the RPF have faced a prosecution internationally, and that's the reason that this particular instance is gaining us so much attention.
There's been a furious response from the Rwandan government. That was to be expected, presumably, was it?
Yes, the Rwandan government sees this arrest really as an indictment of the entire government in Kigali. General Carenzi is obviously current chief of military intelligence. He's a very popular, a very influential figure in Rwandan political and military circles. And so the reaction in Kigali is as though that the entire system is under attack. It should also be said that the indictments in Spain have been criticized by a very wide range of actors, including by human rights organizations like Human Rights Watch, which are typically very critical of the government in Rwanda. Human Rights Watch has commented on the sloppiness of the investigations underpinning these arrest warrants. And there are some serious question marks as to whether the charges, in fact, would stick if this, in fact, proceeds to trial.
What options are now open to the British authorities?
The British authorities have several options available to them. There are meetings ongoing between the Rwandan foreign minister, who jumped on a plane immediately and went to London over the weekend. She's lobbying the UK authorities to refuse this arrest warrant and not to transfer General Carenzi to Spain. So that's one option. Another option is that, of course, Britain could decide to send Carenzi to Madrid, or alternatively, the UK could even prosecute a General Carenzi on British soil under the terms of universal jurisdiction. So the British authorities have a wide range of possibilities at their disposal.
Phil Clark from Sorrows University of London.
Behind the headlines.
And in behind the headlines, we return to South Africa and back to the Parliament chambers. You might recall the controversy over the cost to the taxpayer of President Zuma's Nkandla's residence. South Africa's National Assembly witnessed some unruly scenes which led to members of Julius Malema's opposition economic freedom fighters being forcibly evicted by armed police. Now the ruling ANC is seeking ways of dealing with such behaviour, as Subri Govenda now reports.
It was ugly scenes like this and shouts of
"I have implemented"
that forced the Speaker of South Africa's National Parliament, Baleke Mbete, to adjourn a parliamentary session last week, not for the first time this year. In February, Mbete called in armed police to remove Julius Malema and members of his economic freedom fighters after they prevented Zuma from delivering his State of the Nation address. This time round, she could not call in the police because the High Court ruled that it was illegal to eject members from Parliament. Mbete and her ANC colleagues have now called for stricter security measures to be introduced to control unruly members. The ANC's chief spokesperson in Parliament, Moloto Motapo, emphasized the need for greater security to control members.
You need very good security guards of Parliament that will be able to be called in and instantly deal with whatever chaos that plays itself out in the House.
Constitutional law experts and political analysts view the latest moves by the ANC as contrary to free speech and debate guaranteed in the country's democratic constitution. Professor Kathy Govender is a constitutional law expert at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban and a former judge.
Parliament is meant to be a place where you have virtual absolute freedom of expression because you want people to debate ideas that concern the nation. You can't remove parliamentarians for things they say.
Dr. Zakhele Ndlovu, a senior political science lecturer and analyst, is of the view that robust debate is necessary for the government and its leaders to be held accountable.
For me, I think that beefing up security is not going to bring about any solution. I think both sides have to take responsibility.
Ordinary South Africans are divided over the ANC's desire to introduce security guards in parliament.
If the measures for security are going to be necessary to create a sort of order in parliament, then there isn't any other way to restore order.
Parliament is not a circus as it has been displayed, but it's to get this sort of order and to get constructive debates going on. I think with this whole chaos, nothing has been done. There are no issues that we hear about. We just hear about fighting.
The security measures, like increasing security, is going to create more disorder.
The chaotic scenes that have occurred in South Africa's parliament several times since June last year are clearly not appreciated by the general public. But introducing security guards to control unruly members is not what many sacrificed their lives for, to bring about their freedom and a constitutional democracy. But it's unlikely that tempers will cool as long as Inkandla continues to be an issue.
That report was compiled by Subri Govender. Let's head to Ghana now. The West African nation was spared from the deadly Ebola outbreak in the region. In fact, Ghana hasn't recorded any Ebola cases whatsoever. Nonetheless, Ghanaian authorities are keen to get involved in vaccine trials for the lethal virus. But these plans ran into hefty public opposition and have since been temporarily suspended by the health minister, as Isaac Kalechi reports from Accra.
It was just a proposal, but it became controversial ever since the media made the issue public. Ghana's renowned scientific research center, the Noguchi Memorial Institute, had linked up with Ghana's Food and Drugs Authority to organize a trial. Some communities had been identified and potential volunteers earmarked, but media discussions on the matter generated public uproar. To counter this, the health ministry announced its backing for the trial. Here is Deputy Health Minister, Dr. Victor Bampo.
The Ministry of Health is really pleased that we have the Food and Drugs Authority, which is the proper regulatory authority to look into this and to provide guidance and direction and approval. The ministry's position is very simple, that we would hope that the institutions will work and we are backing the institutions to work.
Residents of the Volta region town of Ho, one of the areas earmarked for the trial, continued to reject the idea of serving as volunteers.
Ghana is not declared Ebola country. Therefore, what they are doing is wrong. Other than that, the government should forget with the Voltairians who will not allow him to do that on us. You should send it to North.
The officials should use this opportunity to sensitize the public thoroughly and engage stakeholders to allay our fears.
On the Ebola issue, I think the calling off right now, it's a good idea because there's a lot of fear and panic in the public about the side effects of this vaccine.
Parliamentarians in Ghana have also waded into the controversy. The MPs succeeded in getting the speaker to summon the health minister to the law chamber. The minister agreed with parliament to embark on a sensitization program to win the trust of Ghanaians for the planned trial. That exercise has now been taking place across the country. At one session in Accra, lead researcher Professor Fred Binka announced he is willing to volunteer to test the vaccine if that is what it will take to assure Ghanaians that a trial is safe.
I've had a battle with the Food and Drugs Authority. I will be the first to take the vaccine because this is a political disease and maybe we have to find different ways of doing that. I don't think I'll be offering Ghanaians something that will be dangerous to them.
Prominent members of the ruling National Democratic Congress are not satisfied. Regional Chairman Kwejo Japon says the exercise was needless.
We feel that it is an unnecessary risk. That is why we are appealing to the Minister for Health to cancel the team completely.
Isaac Kalechi reporting in Accra.
Opinion.
And for opinion, let's reflect on our top story. What do you think of South Africa's decision to shield Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir from an international arrest warrant? Or of suggestions that South Africa should withdraw from the International Criminal Court? In a moment, I will inform you how to send us your opinion. But first, let's hear the views of Daniel Pels, head of DW English for Africa Service.
It could hardly have been more embarrassing. The South African government saw nothing wrong in inviting war crime suspect Omar al-Bashir to their country, rolling out the red carpet, and then surreptitiously smuggling him back to Khartoum. South Africa, which is ruled by a party that was once a symbol for the preservation of peace, liberty and human rights, has been shielding an individual alleged to have committed genocide. If that weren't enough, the ruling African National Congress then went one stage further. Secretary General Gwede Mantashe denounced the International Criminal Court in a radio interview, quote, as a tool of the powerful, intent on destroying the weak, end of quote. South Africa should cease cooperation with the court, he said. The sentiments expressed by Mantashe could just as easily have come from Uhuru Kenyatta, who faced charges at the ICC linked to ethnic post-election violence in Kenya in 2007. Criticism of the ICC is certainly justified. Of course, it is a matter of concern that all the current cases before court are African. It is legitimate to complain that the prosecution did not work as thoroughly as it should have done in some instances and that some cases dragged on for years. It is equally legitimate to complain that the court only hears cases from Africa. But to criticize the ICC because it has Bashir on its wanted list and is ignoring other cases is tantamount to blaming the fire brigade for a fire because they arrived too late to put it out. The real culprit is, of course, the person who started it. The International Criminal Court is not some neo-colonialist outpost. And South Africa is far from being a leading power in the region, if Gwede Mantashe's words reflect South African government policy. If South Africa does wish to lead, then Mantashe should stop behaving like a schoolboy who bursts into tears over a reprimand from a teacher. South Africa is seeking closer ties with other African nations because it is growing increasingly similar to other African countries. The times when South Africa was the model country in the region are now gone. Even though South Africa's constitution is one of the most liberal in the world, its civil society alert and its media vigilant, democracy is still being eroded away. This is because the ANC as the ruling party is politically unassailable. A genuine opposition is not on the horizon. The ANC leadership knows how to use this to its advantage. Jacob Zuma regards the South African state as his personal property. Otherwise, he would not have spent 18 million euros on refurbishing his private residence. Or, to give another example, ANC party membership would not be an inside lane to well-paying government jobs. In the case of Omar al-Bashir, the government even rode roughshod over that crucial dividing line separating the executive from the judiciary. The government ignored a court ruling that Bashir should not leave South Africa until the issue of his extradition to the ICC had been clarified. South Africans are quite worried about the future of the country. It has ignored a court ruling, duped the ICC, and treated a war crime suspect as a friend.
Daniel Pels, head of DW's English for Africa service. Do you agree with what he said? Do write and tell us, and you could win a great prize. Send your comments in a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or in an SMS to country code 49160-957-59510. And do tune in to your say on Africa Link on Friday to find out if you're among the prize winners. And now a reminder of our main stories. South African opposition parties have condemned the government for allowing Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir to fly back home despite a court order preventing him from leaving the country. Prosecutors in Spain have called for Britain to extradite the head of Rwanda's intelligence service to Madrid. And we've also been hearing why Ebola vaccine trials have been put on hold in Ghana. Well, that's all we had for you in this edition of Africa Link. For more news, just visit our website dw.com/Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideu, wishing you a splendid day.